Chapter 14. Continued.
"How was practice?"
asked Hermione rather coolly half an hour later, as Harry and Ron climbed through the portrait hole into the Gryffindor common room.
"It was,"
Harry began. "Completely lousy," said Ron in a hollow voice, sinking into a chair beside Hermione. She looked up at Ron, and her frostiness seemed to melt.
"Well, it was only your first one," she said consolingly. "It's bound to take time to—"
"Who said it was me who made it lousy?" snapped Ron.
"No one," said Hermione, looking taken aback.
"I thought you thought I was bound to be rubbish."
"No, of course I didn't. Look, you said it was lousy, so I just—"
"I'm going to get started on some homework," said Ron angrily, and stomped off to the staircase to the boys' dormitories and vanished from sight. Hermione turned to Harry.
"Was he lousy?"
"No," said Harry loyally. Hermione raised her eyebrows.
"Well, I suppose he could have played better," Harry muttered. "But it was only the first training session, like you said."
Neither Harry nor Ron seemed to make much headway with their homework that night. Harry knew Ron was too preoccupied with how badly he had performed at Quidditch practice, and he himself was having difficulty in getting the "Gryffindor losers" chant out of his head. They spent the whole of Sunday in the common room, buried in their books, while the room around them filled up, then emptied. It was another clear, fine day, and most of their fellow Gryffindors spent the day out in the grounds, enjoying what might well be some of the last sunshine that year. By the evening, Harry felt as though somebody had been beating his brain against the inside of his skull. "You know, we probably should try and get more homework done during the week," Harry muttered to Ron, as they finally laid aside Professor McGonagall's long essay on the Inanimatus Conjurus spell, and turned miserably to Professor Sinistra's equally long and difficult essay about Jupiter's many moons. "Yeah," said Ron, rubbing slightly bloodshot eyes and throwing his fifth spoiled bit of parchment into the fire beside them.
"Listen, shall we just ask Hermione if we can have a look at what she's done?"
Harry glanced over at her. She was sitting with Crookshanks on her lap and chatting merrily to Ginny as a pair of knitting needles flashed in mid-air in front of her, now knitting a pair of shapeless elf socks. "No," he said heavily, "you know she won't let us." And so they worked on while the sky outside the windows became steadily darker. Slowly, the crowd in the common room began to thin again. At 11:30, Hermione wandered over to them, yawning.
"Nearly done?"
"No," said Ron shortly.
"Jupiter's biggest moon is Ganymede, not Callisto," she said, pointing over Ron's shoulder at a line in his astronomy essay. "And it's Io that's got the volcanoes."
"Thanks," snarled Ron, scratching out the offending sentences.
"Sorry, I only—"
"Yeah, well, if you've just come over here to criticize—"
"Ron, I haven't got time to listen to a sermon, all right, Hermione? I'm up to my neck in it here."
"No, look." Hermione was pointing to the nearest window. Harry and Ron both looked over. A handsome screech owl was standing on the windowsill, gazing into the room at Ron.
"Isn't that Hermes?" said Hermione, sounding amazed.
"Blimey, it is," said Ron quietly, throwing down his quill and getting to his feet.
"What's Percy writing to me for?"
He crossed to the window and opened it. Hermes flew inside, landed on Ron's essay, and held out a leg to which a letter was attached. Ron took the letter off it, and the owl departed at once, leaving inky footprints across Ron's drawing of the moon Io.
"That's definitely Percy's handwriting,"
said Ron, sinking back into his chair and staring at the words on the outside of the scroll. "Ronald Weasley, Gryffindor House, Hogwarts." He looked up at the other two.
"What do you reckon?"
"Open it," said Hermione eagerly, and Harry nodded. Ron unrolled the scroll and began to read. The further down the parchment his eyes travelled, the more pronounced became his scowl. When he had finished reading, he looked disgusted. He thrust the letter at Harry and Hermione, who leaned towards each other to read it together. "Dear Ron,
I have only just heard, from no less a person than the Minister for Magic himself, who has it from your new teacher, Professor Umbridge, that you've become a Hogwarts prefect. I was most pleasantly surprised when I heard this news, and must firstly offer my congratulations. I must admit that I have always been afraid that you would take what we might call the Fred and George route, rather than following in my footsteps. So you can imagine my feelings on hearing you have stopped flouting authority and have decided to shoulder some real responsibility. But I want to give you more than congratulations, Ron. I want to give you some advice, which is why I am sending this at night, rather than by the usual morning post. Hopefully, you will be able to read this away from prying eyes and avoid awkward questions. From something the minister let slip when telling me you are now a prefect, I gather that you are still seeing a lot of Harry Potter. I must tell you, Ron, that nothing could put you in danger of losing your badge more than continued fraternization with that boy. Yes, I'm sure you are surprised to hear this. No doubt you will say that Potter has always been Dumbledore's favourite. But I feel bound to tell you that Dumbledore may not be in charge at Hogwarts much longer, and the people who count have a very different and probably more accurate view of Potter's behaviour. I shall say no more here, but if you look at the Daily Prophet tomorrow, you will get a good idea of the way the wind is blowing, and see if you can spot yours truly. Seriously, Ron, you do not want to be tarred with the same brush as Potter. It could be very damaging to your future prospects, and I'm talking here about life after school, too. As you must be aware, given that our father escorted him to court, Potter had a disciplinary hearing this summer in front of the whole Wizengamot, and he did not come out of it looking too good. He got off on a mere technicality, if you ask me, and many of the people I've spoken to remain convinced of his guilt. It may be that you are afraid to sever ties with Potter. I know that he can be unbalanced, and, for all I know, violent. But if you have any worries about this, or have spotted anything else in Potter's behaviour that is troubling you, I urge you to speak to Dolores Umbridge, a truly delightful woman who I know will be only too happy to advise you. This leads me to my other bit of advice. As I have hinted above, Dumbledore's regime at Hogwarts may soon be over. Your loyalty, Ron, should be not to him, but to the school and the ministry. I'm very sorry to hear that so far Professor Umbridge is encountering very little cooperation from staff as she strives to make those necessary changes within Hogwarts that the Ministry so ardently desires, although she should find this easier from next week. Again, see the Daily Prophet tomorrow. I shall say only this. A student who shows himself willing to help Professor Umbridge now may be very well placed for head boyship in a couple of years. I am sorry that I was unable to see more of you over the summer. It pains me to criticise our parents, but I'm afraid I can no longer live under their roof while they remain mixed up with the dangerous crowd around Dumbledore. If you are writing to Mother at any point, you might tell her that a certain Sturgis Podmore, who is a great friend of Dumbledore's, has recently been sent to Azkaban for trespass at the Ministry. Perhaps that will open their eyes to the kind of petty criminals with whom they are currently rubbing shoulders. I count myself very lucky to have escaped the stigma of association with such people. The minister really could not be more gracious to me. And I do hope, Ron, that you will not allow family ties to blind you to the misguided nature of our parents' beliefs and actions either. I sincerely hope that in time they will realise how mistaken they were, and I shall, of course, be ready to accept a full apology when that day comes. Please think over what I have said most carefully, particularly the bit about Harry Potter, and congratulations again
on becoming prefect. Your brother, Percy.
Harry looked up at Ron.
Well, he said, trying to sound as though he found the whole thing a joke. If you want to, what is it?
He checked Percy's letter.
Oh, yeah. Sever ties with me. I swear I won't get violent.
Give it back, said Ron, holding out his hand.
He is, Ron said jerkily, tearing Percy's letter in half, the world's, he tore it into quarters, biggest, he tore it into eighths, git.
He threw the pieces into the fire.
Come on, we've got to get this finished sometime before dawn, he said briskly to Harry, pulling Professor Sinistra's essay back towards him.
Hermione was looking at Ron with an odd expression on her face.
"Oh, give them here," she said abruptly.
"What?" said Ron.
"Give them to me. I'll look through them and correct them," she said.
"Are you serious?"
"Oh, Hermione, you're a lifesaver," said Ron.
"What can I..."
"What you can say is, we promise we'll never leave our homework this late again," she said, holding out both hands for their essays. But she looked slightly amused all the same.
"Thanks a million, Hermione," said Harry weakly, passing over his essay and sinking back into his armchair, rubbing his eyes.
It was now past midnight, and the common room was deserted but for the three of them and Crookshanks. The only sound was that of Hermione's quill scratching out sentences here and there on their essays, and the ruffle of pages as she checked various facts in the reference books strewn across the table. Harry was exhausted. He also felt an odd, sick, empty feeling in his stomach that had nothing to do with tiredness, and everything to do with the letter now curling blackly in the heart of the fire. He knew that half the people inside Hogwarts thought him strange, even mad. He knew that the Daily Prophet had been making snide allusions to him for months. But there was something about seeing it written down like that in Percy's writing, about knowing that Percy was advising Ron to drop him, and even to tell tales about him to Umbridge, that made his situation real to him as nothing else had. He had known Percy for 4 years, had stayed in his house during the summer holidays, shared a tent with him during the Quidditch World Cup, had even been awarded full marks by him in the second task of the Triwizard Tournament last year. Yet now, Percy thought him unbalanced and possibly violent. And with a surge of sympathy for his godfather, Harry thought Sirius was probably the only person he knew who could really understand how he felt at the moment, because Sirius was in the same situation. Nearly everyone in the wizarding world thought Sirius a dangerous murderer and a great Voldemort supporter, and he had had to live with that knowledge for 14 years. Harry blinked. He had just seen something in the fire that could not have been there. It had flashed into sight and vanished immediately. No, it could not have been. He had imagined it because he had been thinking about Sirius.
"Okay, write that down," Hermione said to Ron, pushing his essay and a sheet covered in her own writing back to Ron.
"Then add this conclusion I've written for you."
"Hermione, you are honestly the most wonderful person I've ever met," said Ron weakly. "And if I'm ever rude to you again..."
"I'll know you're back to normal," said Hermione.
"Harry, yours is okay, except for this bit at the end. I think you must have misheard Professor Sinistra. Europa's covered in ice, not mice."
"Harry?"
Harry had slid off his chair onto his knees, and was now crouching on the singed and threadbare hearthrug, gazing into the flames.
"Harry," said Ron uncertainly, "why are you down there?"
"Because I've just seen Sirius's head in the fire," said Harry.
He spoke quite calmly. After all, he had seen Sirius's head in this very fire the previous year, and talked to it too. Nevertheless, he could not be sure that he had really seen it this time. It had vanished so quickly.
"Sirius's head?" Hermione repeated.
"You mean like when he wanted to talk to you during the Triwizard Tournament?"
But he wouldn't do that now. It would...
Sirius!
She gasped, gazing at the fire. Ron dropped his quill. There, in the middle of the dancing flames, sat Sirius's head, long dark hair falling around his grinning face.
"I was starting to think you'd go to bed before everyone else had disappeared," he said. "I've been checking every hour."
"You've been popping into the fire every hour," Harry said, half laughing.
"Just for a few seconds to check if the coast was clear."
"But what if you'd been seen?" said Hermione anxiously.
"Well, I think a girl, first year by the look of her, might have got a glimpse of me earlier. But don't worry," Sirius said hastily, as Hermione clapped a hand to her mouth. "I was gone the moment she looked back at me, and I'll bet she just thought I was an oddly shaped log or something."
"But, Sirius, this is taking an awful risk," Hermione began.
"You sound like Molly," said Sirius. This was the only way I could come up with of answering Harry's letter without resorting to a code, and codes are breakable.
At the mention of Harry's letter, Hermione and Ron both turned to stare at him. "You didn't say you'd written to Sirius," said Hermione accusingly.
"I forgot," said Harry, which was perfectly true. His meeting with Cho in the owlery had driven everything before it out of his mind.
"Don't look at me like that, Hermione. There was no way anyone would have got secret information out of it, was there, Sirius?" "No, it was very good," said Sirius, smiling. "Anyway, we'd better be quick, just in case we're disturbed. Your scar."
"What about?" Ron began, but Hermione interrupted him. "We'll tell you afterwards. Go on, Sirius."
"Well, I know it can't be fun when it hurts, but we don't think it's anything to really worry about. It kept aching all last year, didn't it?"
"Yeah, and Dumbledore said it happened whenever Voldemort was feeling a powerful emotion," said Harry, ignoring, as usual, Ron and Hermione's winces. "So maybe he was just, I don't know, really angry or something the night I had that detention."
"Well, now he's back, it's bound to hurt more often," said Sirius.
"So you don't think it had anything to do with Umbridge touching me when I was in detention with her?" Harry asked.
"I doubt it," said Sirius. "I know her by reputation, and I'm sure she's no Death Eater."
"She's foul enough to be one," said Harry darkly, and Ron and Hermione nodded vigorously in agreement.
"Yes, but the world isn't split into good people and Death Eaters," said Sirius with a wry smile. "I know she's a nasty piece of work, though. You should hear Remus talk about her."
"Does Lupin know her?" asked Harry quickly, remembering Umbridge's comments about dangerous half-breeds during her first lesson.
"No," said Sirius, "but she drafted a bit of anti-werewolf legislation 2 years ago that makes it almost impossible for him to get a job."
Harry remembered how much shabbier Lupin looked these days, and his dislike of Umbridge deepened even further. "What's she got against werewolves?" said Hermione angrily.
"Scared of them, I expect," said Sirius, smiling at her indignation. "Apparently she loathes part humans. She campaigned to have merpeople rounded up and tagged last year, too. Imagine wasting your time and energy persecuting merpeople when there are little toe-rags like creature on the loose."
Ron laughed, but Hermione looked upset. "Sirius," she said reproachfully, "honestly, if you made a bit of an effort with Creature, I'm sure he'd respond. After all, you are the only member of his family he's got left, and Professor Dumbledore said..."
"So, what are Umbridge's lessons like?" Sirius interrupted. "Is she training you all to kill half-breeds?"
"No," said Harry, ignoring Hermione's affronted look at being cut off in her defence of Creature.
"She's not letting us use magic at all."
"All we do is read the stupid textbook," said Ron.
"Ah, well, that figures," said Sirius. "Our information from inside the Ministry is that Fudge doesn't want you trained in combat."
"Trained in combat?" repeated Harry incredulously. "What does he think we're doing here, forming some sort of wizard army?"
"That's exactly what he thinks you're doing," said Sirius. "Or rather, that's exactly what he's afraid Dumbledore's doing, forming his own private army. with which she will be able to take on the Ministry of Magic.
There was a pause at this. Then Ron said, "That's the most stupid thing I've ever heard, including all the stuff that Luna Lovegood comes out with."
"So we're being prevented from learning Defence Against the Dark Arts because Fudge is scared we'll use spells against the Ministry?"
said Hermione, looking furious.
"Yep," said Sirius. "Fudge thinks Dumbledore will stop at nothing to seize power. He's getting more paranoid about Dumbledore by the day. It's a matter of time before he has Dumbledore arrested on some trumped-up charge."
This reminded Harry of Percy's letter.
"Do you know if there's going to be anything about Dumbledore and the Daily Prophet tomorrow? Ron's brother Percy reckons there will be."
"I don't know," said Sirius. "I haven't seen anyone from the Order all weekend. They're all busy. It's just been Creature and me here."
There was a definite note of bitterness in Sirius's voice.
"So you haven't had any news about Hagrid either?"
"Ah," said Sirius. "Well, he was supposed to be back by now. No one's sure what's happened to him."
Then, seeing their stricken faces, he added quickly,
"But Dumbledore's not worried, so don't you three get yourselves in a state. I'm sure Hagrid's fine."
"But if he was supposed to be back by now," said Hermione, in a small, anxious voice.
"Madame Maxine was with him. We've been in touch with her, and she says they got separated on the journey home. But there's nothing to suggest he's hurt, or, well, nothing to suggest he's not perfectly okay."
Unconvinced, Harry, Ron, and Hermione exchanged worried looks.
"Listen, don't go asking too many questions about Hagrid," said Sirius hastily. "It'll just draw even more attention to the fact that he's not back, and I know Dumbledore doesn't want that. Hagrid's tough. He'll be okay."
And when they did not appear cheered by this, Sirius,
"When's your next Hogsmeade weekend, anyway?"
"I was thinking, we got away with the dog disguise at the station, didn't we? I thought I could..."
"No!"
said Harry and Hermione together, very loudly.
"Sirius, didn't you see the Daily Prophet?"
said Hermione anxiously.
"Oh, that," said Sirius, grinning. "They're always guessing where I am. They haven't really got a clue."
"Yeah, but we think this time they have," said Harry.
"Something Malfoy said on the train made us think he knew it was you. And his father was on the platform, Sirius. You know, Lucius Malfoy. So don't come up here, whatever you do. If Malfoy recognises you again..."
"All right, all right. I've got the point," said Sirius.
He looked most displeased.
"Just an idea. Thought you might like to get together."
"I would. I just don't want you chucked back in Azkaban," said Harry.
There was a pause, in which Sirius looked out of the fire at Harry, a crease between his sunken eyes.
"You're less like your father than I thought," he said finally, a definite coolness in his voice. "The risk would have been what made it fun for James."
"Look,
well, I'd better get going. I can hear Creature coming down the stairs," said Sirius.
But Harry was sure he was lying.
"I'll write to tell you a time I can make it back into the fire, then, shall I? If you can stand to risk it."
There was a tiny pop, and the place where Sirius's head had been was flickering flame once more.